So our, would you like to introduce our next item, Mr. Robertson?
Our next item is item 11, Irrigated Lands Program Update for amending the monitoring and reporting requirements. On August 22nd, 2016, I amended the monitoring and reporting programs for the current Ag Order 2.0, adding pesticide-related analyses and groundwater monitoring for the 2017 monitoring year following consultation with the board. Some stakeholders objected to these amendments and filed a petition for a review of this action by the State Water Board. During conversations with these stakeholders, I suggested they hold the petition in abeyance pending a discussion on the matter before the Central Coast Water Board, and this is that discussion. With that, I will pass it over to Chris Rose of our staff, who will provide a presentation on this item.
Good morning, Chair Wolf and members of the board. My name is Christopher Rose. I'm the Irrigated Lands Program Manager of the Central Coast Water Board. And as Mr. Robertson said, this is agenda item number 11, the amended monitoring and reporting program requirements. Water quality issues and goals that I'd like to discuss briefly this morning include documented pesticide use changes that have been occurring in the region, toxicity indicators in the current MRPs that are not aligned with pesticide use. And of course, the goal of the agricultural order, which is to address water quality issues from agricultural discharges. Here's a table showing pesticide use changes in Monterey and Santa Barbara counties, which of course include the Santa Maria watershed as well as the Salinas watershed, where we have agricultural activities. Neonicotinoids in 2010 amounted to about 43,000 pounds of active chemical applied. In 2014, neonicotinoid accounted for 70,000 pounds applied in those two counties. And then if we take a look at the pyrethroids in 2010, we have 46,638 pounds applied in 2010 compared to 70,378 pounds in 2014. And then chlorprophosphatidazone malathion in 2010, 362,507 pounds applied compared to just over 137,000 pounds applied. So as you can see, the neonicotinoids and the pyrethroids have been increasing in use, whereas the organophosphates, chlorprophosphatidazone and malathion, have been decreasing in use. Here's a graph showing imidacloprid, which is the neonicotinoid concentration. On the left-hand side, you have the concentration. At the bottom, you have the year of the concentration that was identified at these different monitoring sites. This is in the Orca Creek watershed. And the red slash line is the US EPA benchmark of 1.05 micrograms per liter. So, excuse me, so as you can see, between 2011 and 2015 at these sites in Orca Creek, which is in the Santa Maria River watershed, you can see an increasing trend towards concentrations that are above that US EPA benchmark for imidacloprid, which is, again, a neonicotinoid. For pyrethroid pesticides, bifenthrin specifically, this is a graph of the Timbalitero slough, which is in the Salinas River watershed. On the left-hand side, you have the concentration. At the bottom, again, you have the year of the concentration that was denoted, and we have detections and non-detects. Again, we have the red hash line showing the US EPA benchmark for bifenthrin. And again, from 2012 to 2015, you see this general increasing trend in concentration. All of which, of course, are above the US EPA benchmark.
Ask for a clarification?
Yeah.
A previous slide, please.
Yep.
When you say the lowest, is there such a thing as the highest? Because that shows in other slides. So.
Yeah. I can tell you that for this particular one, the lowest U.S. EPA benchmark is something that is not protective. So we know that at this concentration that we had test organisms that were dying. I don't know that we have the other benchmarks for this particular chemical, bifenthrin, like we did for imidacloprid. And again, I can tell you that the U.S. EPA benchmark is not protective.
Can I ask a couple questions on that, or do you want to wait?
Yeah, because, you know, as he goes through a lot of slides, I think it helps a little bit, because if we wait toward the end, it becomes very difficult because these are details, and certainly I think this will enrich the conversation.
So my questions are very brief. I don't understand the non-detection. What is a non-detection?
So that means that the chemical was not detected, and typically what they would do is that doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't present. So I think what they do is they take half of the reporting limit and they report that. But still it shows up as a non-detect. Again, that doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't present. It just means that they couldn't detect it at the levels that they could do it with the lab analysis for.
Okay. I'm still a little confused on that, but it might take too much time to clear me up. The trend you mentioned is up year by year or over the years.
Yeah.
But the start of 2015 and mid-2015, it seems like those are lower. So if you did a regression analysis, would you have an increasing trend, or might you have a decreasing trend when you hit the 2015?
Yeah, so we didn't do a trend analysis. I suppose you're right. There would be high variability as you if you tried to put a line through there, but we could do a trend analysis. My point is that for the concentrations that we do have detects that were above this benchmark, which we know is not protective.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Young.
Chris, my question is, on this particular slide, what do you want us to take from it?
What we have is we have bifenthrin concentrations in the template area, so in Salinas watershed, that are not protective of water quality. For virtually all of the samples that DPR took, and that we have data for, and consequently, this is a chemical that we believe needs to be tested for as we move forward with our monitoring.
And are these single samples?
I'm sorry,
single.
I don't know what you mean.
Each of these results, is this a single result from a sample?
It's a single result.
Like 2012, just above 0.002. Is that one sample taken?
Yes.
And so what's the statistical significance when you just take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 8 or 9 samples spread over 3 years, 4 years, and try to say much about it? Do we need a certain amount of data before we have confidence in what we're looking at, or is this sufficient?
Personally, I think this, in conjunction with when we take a look at the amount of the pesticide that is used, the active ingredient, in the increasing trend, that it is enough for us to recommend that we should be testing for this pesticide in our MRPs.
Okay.
And just I'd like to interject for a second, since this item 11 now is being covered. I'm closing the speaker cards because I keep getting little trickles. So if you still want to have fill a speaker card, this is the time to do it, because I'm going to close the speaker card. So I see one more person, and then that's it. All right? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, shall I move on? I'm moving on then. Okay.
Sure. Thank you.
This is a slide from the executive officer's report for May 2015. What I'd like to show you is on the far right-hand side, these samples were taken by the Cooperative Monitoring Program in August 2014 using the typical 3 species that we use for assessing toxicity. like Ceridaphnia, the minnow, and then an algae species. And what we had at these sample sites, Alice Hall Slough, Chular Creek, Main Street Ditch, which is in Santa Maria, so these are from the Salinas watershed and the Santa Maria watershed, is that in August 2014, the NT refers to not toxic. So we were not getting a toxic result from the cooperative monitoring program using the typical test species that we've been using in the MRPs. And then what we have here is data from Granite Canyon that they came in a month later, September 2014, at these same sites. And rather than using the other test species, they used Hylella, which is sensitive to pyrethroids, and Chironomus, which is sensitive to the neonicotinoids. And we have an 89% exceedance, or 89% toxicity at the same sites a month later. So to us, what this is, it's an indicator that we must align toxicity indicator species with the pesticides used. That is, it is possible, taking a look at this, that we didn't have the right indicator species to assess the toxicity for the chemicals that are being used. And you recall from the previous slides that we were showing an increased use in neonicotinoids as well as the pyrethroids, which these indicator species are sensitive to.
Question, Chair?
Yes, sir.
A brief question on that last slide.
Yeah.
Can you educate me how the combined percent can be higher than the three individual percent toxicities?
Yeah. This is put together by Karen Worcester, and I'm sorry she's not here. I don't know how she came up with that, but there's a reason for it. I'm sorry, I can't answer that. This was out of the EO report for 2015.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
Question, Chris, yeah. Then on the far right column.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, again, if you did, the three species that were used?
Sure. Ceridaphnia, which is used as an indicator species for the LPs, and fathead minnow.
Okay.
And then I can't pronounce it, but it's an algae species,
okay.
The algae species that we're typically using.
And Hylella is an algae species?
No, I'm sorry, Hylella. Hylella is not an algae species. It's an invert.
Okay.
It's an invertebrate that is sensitive to pyrethroids.
Okay.
Okay, move on. So, again, I think it's important that we align toxicity indicator species with the pesticides used. I'm going to shift now to nitrate and groundwater. As you know, with our current agricultural order 2.0, about 25% of the 1,733 well sample exceeded the standard. The nitrate drinking water standard. For irrigation well samples, about 26% are of the 1,266 well sample exceeded the nitrate drinking water standard. Of course, some wells were not sampled in Ag Order 2.0 if they were part of the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition. And you probably recall that in the July board meeting, we talked about a potential data gap and planning that the Cooperative Monitoring Program needed to do. So the pre-amended MRPs were silent on monitoring requirements in 2017. So consequently, there would be a potential data gap if we didn't have monitoring requirements that were outlined by the executive officer for 2017. The cooperative monitoring program in July 2016 at our board meeting there talked to you about contracting and the need for some certainty about what the monitoring requirements were going to be so that they could do contracting with labs and that they could also then do their budgeting and invoicing. Outreach efforts prior to amending the MRPs. So as I just said, in July at our board meeting in 2016, at the July board meeting, we discussed the fact that we needed to have some monitoring requirements in 2017 to address some of the things that I just said, like the data gaps and the water quality issues. Following the July board meeting, then I had some outreach efforts via webcast meetings. The webcast meeting on number one in August 15th included technical service providers, grower shipper, farm bureaus, Central Coast Groundwater Coalition, and some of our larger growers and Preservation, Inc. On that same day, with a different webcast meeting, I also had an outreach event with Monterey County Coast Keeper, Environmental Law Foundation, Environmental Justice for Coalition for Water. So again, this was following the July board meeting, but before the MRPs were amended by the executive officer on the August 22nd. Here's a slide from those webcast meetings that I presented to all those parties that I just mentioned. First bullet was the fact that notification on the amended MRPs was following, and it was coming, and it was going to be sent to growers and stakeholders, that there was going to be groundwater monitoring required, and that we were going to be including in the surface receiving water monitoring requirements the pyrethroids, the neonicotinoids, Hylella and Chironomus. Of course, the neonics, the neonicotinoids, and the Chironomus would be new to the MRPs. So again, this is a slide from those outreach meetings on August 15th. Then on August 22nd, 2016, the executive officer issued the amended MRPs. Staff notified all stakeholders, including all growers, all grower operations. On September 6th, we had a phone conference with Grower Shipper of Central California, and this was the first time that they objected to the MRPs. They were specifically concerned about the inclusion of the neonicotinoid pesticides. At that time, Grower Shipper and staff agreed to a public discussion at the December 8th board meeting, which we are now here today. Following that, then, Grower Shipper and other parties filed the petition held in abeyance, of course, following this discussion. Summary of the amended RPs includes the additions of the neonicotinoid pesticides, the addition of the indicator species Chironomus, which is, of course, sensitive to neonicotinoid pesticides. The deletions include carbamate pesticides, organochlorine pesticides, the minnow indicator species, and then habitat assessment. Continued from earlier MRPs, we included in the 2017 amended requirements pyrethroid and organophosphate pesticide monitoring, Hylella and Ceridaphnia toxicity indicators, and of course, groundwater monitoring.
Chris, if I could interject here, with respect to some of the deletions, or with respect to the deleted analytes on that list, staff considered the increased cost associated with the neonicotinoid additions and the pyrethroid additions, and we're trying to create some element of cost neutrality there. Understanding also that it needs to be technically driven, and this is also some of the decision-making was based on the low frequency of detections associated with some of the pesticide classes that we were removing or proposing to remove from the amended MRP. So both technical and cost considerations went into the deleted pesticide classes.
John, is there any benefit to keeping the carbamates and organochlorines and minnow and habitat?
I'm going to pass that over to Chris, who knows the data better than I do.
We're not saying that these pesticides and these indicator species should never be used again. What we're advocating for and what we are recommending is that we shift over to these, or that we include these new pesticides and these new indicator species and continue to assess based on things like usage, whether carbamates and organochlorines should be included in the MRPs. But for now, we believe based on the use and the concentrations that we're seeing for the pesticides that are being used, that the pesticides and the indicator species that are aligned with those pesticides should be good for now. So again, we're not saying never again. We're just saying for now, let's shift over to some other things as we see use and toxicity driven by that use changing.
Seems like then we're kind of behind the curve and kind of waiting for the yeast to shift again, and we're playing catch up always.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, is that the smartest way to do this?
Mm-hmm. I think we need to take a more holistic look at toxicity monitoring and how we go about this. As you all know, and as you can see from these slides that I've presented even so far, we've, anecdotally anyway, have had a decreasing trend in the OP use, in the organophosphate use, perhaps partly driven from this order. And we've had an increased use in pesticides that we haven't been monitoring for and resulting toxicity from indicator species that we haven't been using. So if we just keep on adding pesticides and keep on adding indicator species to the list, all right, that, for one thing, is going to cost a lot of money, and I don't know then that we're going to be able to get them all in there. There are many, many chemicals that can be used, quite frankly. And I think that in 4.0, in Ag Order 4.0, which we're going to be discussing as soon as we already are sort of discussing it, but as we've said in previous board meetings, as we move forward with 4.0, I think we need to look at perhaps a different way of doing this and assessing toxicity and being able to move perhaps a little bit more nimbly through the ag water implementation process. I don't think now is the time to have that conversation because we're not quite ready for it, but simply by moving new pesticides onto the MRPs, I think we've seen what that does, and we need to find some other way of doing this. Perhaps focusing on toxicity, toxicity indicator species.
All right.
So I have a follow-up question. If we remove the requirement for the carbonates and the organochlorines monitoring for those, and in the next 3 years, because of that removal, the use of those active ingredients goes up. We're not testing, and so we could we have toxic conditions that are going undetected because now they're shifting. Now the growers would be shifting back to those pollutants that wouldn't be those toxins that wouldn't be detected.
Sure, sure.
Chris, if I can jump in here. I want to acknowledge that the cooperative monitoring plan is not the only monitoring game in town here. In Chris's previous slide, one of Chris's previous slides, he acknowledged that Granite Canyon was also doing monitoring associated with the statewide ambient monitoring for surface water. So there will be other monitoring going on and other data generated at the same time the cooperative monitoring program is doing surface water monitoring. That's how we, per Chris's slide, that's how we made a determination that the pesticide classes that we added to the amended MRPs were being used. That's one of the ways in which, by detection. The other was by usage reports from DPR. So there will be similar data being generated outside of the cooperative monitoring plan that we'll be evaluating and potentially definitely bringing to you as we see it, if it occurs, and then making nimble adaptation associated with the monitoring and reporting programs in 3.0.
So given the existence of other monitoring programs that you've just referred to, will there be any data gap that you expect regarding fathead minnows, sensitivity to carbonates and organochlorines, or do you anticipate that those other existing monitoring programs will leave us such that there is no data gap?
Your initial question was about toxicity driven by carbamates. Ceridophania is sensitive to carbamates, so we would be detecting toxicity driven by a carbamate. Now, we may not be able to tie it to a carbamate. However, we would detect the toxicity, I believe. So that's one thing. The other thing is that where we're moving, as Mr. Robertson said, the carbamates are going to chlorines and minnow, and partly as a result of the fact that we didn't have a lot of exceedances from these in the first place. And then thirdly is that we're going to make a very we're going to clarify the fact that as we see these changes in pesticide use and toxicity driven by pesticides used, that it is within the executive officer's authority to change monitoring reporting requirements if need be in order for us to be consistent with what the goals are of this order. So if we see a shift to back to carbamates in resulting toxicity and we feel that there is not significant monitoring going on from other entities, then we can consider adding carbamates back on to the MRPs.
So if there was a Ceriodaphnia toxicity being shown in exceedance of what we want, then but it was not detectable to source, then would you likely propose a change so that we could determine the source?
Okay, so could you say it one more time?
Yeah, if the Ceriodaphnia was found to be
if it died, yeah.
Dying, yeah. But you weren't sure if it was an increased use in carbonates or some other, you mentioned you wouldn't be sure, uh-huh. Then would you at that time suggest a modification to the monitoring so that we could determine the source of toxicity?
Yes. So, yes, if we felt that it was, if we believe that it was necessary, yes. So when you say would you, would you do this? I think it would depend on the circumstances. So if we had the toxicity to Ceriodaphnia, and we didn't know what was causing that toxicity to Ceriodaphnia, then what we can do is we can do an assessment for the pesticides used up to that toxicity. And let's assume that we had more than just one event of toxicity, and then we could do an analysis and try to hone in on what the pesticides were used that could drive that toxicity, and then recommend a change in the MRPs if necessary.
Okay. And my last question is on economics. I appreciate that it appears staff is considering the economics for the growers, and I just want to clarify, is it true that you're suggesting the deletion of some monitoring in order to compensate for the increased costs of the new monitoring that you're proposing? So is a big piece of this trying to be considerate of the growers' costs?
Both. I would say number one is water. Well, number one is water quality. Again, we would not be advocating for removing these pesticides and these indicator species if we found that there were problems associated with these. And then number two, then of course, when we are looking for a cost savings for the growers, then why not go to areas where we're not having problems? So it's really twofold, water quality and trying to find a cost savings for growers as they move forward with monitoring.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to interject one point here. What we're talking about is the amended MRPs I signed in August, and that is exclusively for the 2017 monitoring year. In March, we'll talk about and what's out in draft as part of 3.0 is the three-year monitoring program for the recommended monitoring program for the recommended three-year lifespan of 3.0. So I just want to make that distinction, and we'll talk more about that second thing, 3.0, and the proposed monitoring and reporting program in the next item. But this is just about the amended MRP and the 2017 monitoring year. As we talk about how we might adapt going forward, that lies more in the discussion, the later discussion today.
Mr. Johnston?
I have a question about the groundwater monitoring, but if there are more questions about the surface water monitoring and pesticides, maybe they should be handled first.
Well, you know, we also have a significant number of speaker cards, so, you know, I think right now the question should tie specifically to the PowerPoint presentation. And then after, you know, we hear comments from the public, you know, we can review other items. He did.
Part of Chris's presentation.
And I want to...
And that's a... go ahead.
I want to acknowledge that Chris also has a few more slides yet to provide, so he's not concluded either.
I'll wait then till his slides are through.
Mr. Chair? Okay. Thank you. So I'm going to move on then. So the summary of the agricultural order addresses threat to water quality from agricultural discharges. That is the goal of the order. And we have the need to align monitoring with the pesticides that are used and the toxicity that those pesticides are causing and the indicator species that would pick up on that toxicity. We also have a need to address a potential data gap that would have occurred had the executive officer not amended the MRPs to give certainty about what the requirements which should be in 2017. And then we also have to address the planning and budgeting needs for a cooperative monitoring program. So our recommendation is that the board uphold the amended monitoring reporting programs as issued on August 22nd by the executive officer.
Mr. Johnson?
So, cribbing from the public comment, there is an issue raised asserting that this amended MRP changes the definition of domestic wells or the requirement as to what has to be monitored in terms of domestic wells. I did not see that mentioned in your presentation. Is that a change?
It is not a change from what we have been implementing. It is rather a clarification of what we have been implementing in Ag Order 2.0. But so it is a change in the language, yes.
It's a change in the language, but it is not a change. It does not require a change in what gets monitored and what wells get tested. Is that correct?
Make sure about this.
Angela Schroeder, supervising engineering geologist. That's correct, Mr. Johnston. So it does not change how and which wells get monitored. It's a clarification that, and actually the clarification for that description of wells was made in our guidance that was posted on our website as in implementing those initial requirements in 2012. So this merely clarifies it for the growers within the MRP, and actually was at the request of growers.
So if I have it straight, then the language or something pretty darn close to it was in the guidance back in 2012, and it's simply moving into the MRP.
That's correct. The MRP in 2012 merely said domestic drinking water wells, and the question came up is, well, if I'm not using the well for cooking or other purposes, is that still a domestic drinking water well? And so we just clarified that it was any well used for cooking, drinking, or other sanitary purposes.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that this is not a change then in terms of what is actually required to be tested.
That's
Thank
correct.
You.
Any other? On my right. So we do have probably 40 to 50 minutes of speaker cards. So what I would like to do, Mr. Robertson, is take a 15-minute break at this time. And we convene at 20 to 11. Thank you.